Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm sitting here with my mum, Lenny. Say hi.
Hi.
Mum.
Yes, darling.
This guest actually is a fan of this podcast.
You're kidding me.
No, thanks to Greg James. Dearest Greg, let me know after he had her on his morning breakfast show at Radio 1. And he said, you know, Emilia Clarke is a massive fan of the podcast. And I said, I don't believe it.
Was she a bit jealous that Greg had been on with
Bella? I don't
know.
I don't know. You can ask her that in a minute.
Okay.
So I slid into the DMs. I don't do it that often.
What's DMs? Do you...
Direct message.
Oh, I thought you meant Dot Martins.
No. What would I be doing?
You slid into your Dot Martins.
Anyway, I slid into Emilia Clarke's DMs and I said, listen, I hear you're a fan. Would you like to come on? She jumped at the chance.
I'm sure, darling.
And she actually requested a dish.
The chicken soup.
The chicken soup.
The chicken soup.
The chicken soup. However, old Emilia has a few dietary requirements. However, she's willing to forego her gluten intolerance for a matzo ball.
Well, I'm not surprised.
So who knows?
My matzo balls have never killed anyone yet.
So let's see if we can get most of the interview out of the way before death by Lenny's matzo ball. No, I'm so excited to have her.
Jessie. I don't dare tell her I've never watched Game of Thrones ever. So which
part... Well, I've watched all of it.
What? Which part does she play?
She was Daenerys. Mother of Dragons.
And did she have a blonde wig?
Yeah, and she looked amazing.
She's very beautiful.
She had like three dragons.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Why does she have three dragons?
Because she's the Mother of Dragons, Mum.
Oh, okay.
But she's much more than just the Mother of Dragons.
What
she is in a Christmas film this year.
I can't wait to see it.
I know, me neither. Last Christmas. But
it's got George Michael music.
She just seems like, from what I've seen in interviews, I would love to get to know her. I think my husband's pretty happy that Daenerys is in the building. I'm all really excited. What have you cooked then?
So I made chicken soup with matzo balls, as requested.
In the book.
And I had a matzo ball catastrophe.
Why?
Put too much baking powder in my matzo balls. And they all kind of virtually exploded. Oh. It was an oversight, but I rectified it within 10 minutes.
Does that mean that there's less matzo balls for us to eat now?
No, because I made a whole new batch.
Oh, thank God.
And then we've got monkfish skewers, skewered on rosemary branches, or rosemary twigs. And we've got broccoli with a kind of anchovy dressing, emulsion.
Like tender stem broccoli.
Tender stem broccoli with and then we've got your... salt and vinegar potatoes.
Yeah, actually, sugar, I need to go and check on them.
And you last night made a dairy-free chocolate cake.
Yeah. So this is a fully gluten-free meal.
Except for
apart from the balls. So that's, yeah. And dairy-free meal.
It's not gluten-free, darling. The chocolate cake's got flour in.
Oh, shit. Why did we make that cake for them?
I don't know. Because if she's going to have a matzo ball, she's not celiac disease, darling.
Oh my God, Mum, why did we make this cake?
Don't know, she can't have any, can she? She can have a few raspberries.
Oh God.
An ice cream.
Mum.
Well,
it's a really good cake though, also in the book. Basically, we've made a whole, you're going to find this quite a lot on the podcast. We're going to be making quite a lot from the cookbook. So yeah, all
just
of these.
Just to excite you.
Just to tantalise those taste buds. We are at the end of this series, series 8.
This is our last one before Christmas.
This is our Christmas cracker.
And she really is.
She bloody well is. We are going to take a short break over Christmas Annie, just so we can stop talking to each other for a bit.
Yeah.
We will be back in the new year, but we would love to hear from you, to hear what you're doing for Christmas dinner, whether we can get any tips for next year. Email us at hello@tablemannerspodcast.com. My daughter is trying to touch the microphone. Can you say happy Christmas to everybody listening to the podcast?
Happy Christmas.
There you go. Happy Christmas.
Well, I hope everyone has a lovely Christmas.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening to us, and we hope that you have a lovely Christmas.
And making it such a fabulous podcast.
Yeah, we are very lucky that you listen. If you're missing us and you're new listeners, then you can listen to some of our old episodes, because we have, what, about over 60 now to listen to, so there you go. You're sorted for the Christmas period. So excited to have this guest, the Christmas cracker that she is, Emilia Clarke, coming up on Table Manners. The stunning Emilia Clarke has just walked through the door with like
gifts.
Huge amount of gifts.
I can't wait for you guys to they're fun. Like
the
one
chocolate.
Of them, they're Christmas themed.
Wow.
What is it? Oh, is it a bauble?
Yeah, but it's filled with Christmas chocolates. So you've got one of them each.
That's
for like
amazing.
Because I figured like babies might be well into being
No, these are amazing.
I just thought they were so cool.
They're biscuits, kind of like a bourbon and jammy dodgers.
But
they're all chocolate.
Chocolate in the shape of
like
jammy dodgers.
It's so funny. Oh my God. It's like you knew my daughter said just before you came, I want chocolate.
Amazing.
These are amazing. Thanks so much.
Oh, no worries. I loved it. It was like my most joyous thing. I was trying to work out. I was like, what am I going to get you guys? It's got my Christmas theme.
When do you have time to go shopping?
Yeah. Oh, please. That's very close to me. So, and they were like, they literally called me a regular today. I was like, oh no.
Are you a chocolate?
That's embarrassing. Yeah. Like, it's like a need. Someone once told me that if you crave chocolate, like dark chocolate, which is what I like genuinely trained myself to like, because when I was...
Snap.
Do you know what I mean? You're like, white chocolate all day, obviously.
Yeah. Milky bar.
Milk chocolate.
Yeah, milky bar. But then when I started getting into dark chocolate, someone told me that when you crave it, it's you're craving oxygen.
Oh, I heard it was magnesium.
Or something. There's like some genuine... Because you know you get those cravings, especially in the dark, where you're like, it's like a pregnancy.
I thought it was when you,
when
you had your period.
The iron in it. There's all that good stuff in it.
So
I get well into that and kind of try and enjoy it.
So you've like brought over chocolates. You're a chocoholic. Yes. Are you sick to death of Christmas yet?
So we shot it last year.
Around Christmas.
At Christmas. So we shot it all before Christmas. Then we took 2 weeks off to have our own Christmases and then carried on. And it was kind of... It worked out sort of well because we were filming it at Christmas and we're filming it in London where it's all Christmassy anyway. And you're just like, amazing. All it did is make all of our own Christmases the most exhausting things you've ever... like. Because we're all like, this isn't the movie. Where are the fairy lights on crack? Like,
what's it? Okay,
yeah,
he's okay,
gorgeous.
Perfect.
Gorgeous.
Yes.
Yeah, he's cute.
Oh, like
is
Adonis.
He, now, was he in Crazy Rich...
Yeah,
Crazy Rich Asians.
Good kisser?
Yes. Genuinely, yes.
He's so good looking.
Yeah, no, because there are some where you're like, oh,
dude. Oh, God.
But no, he was... just brilliant.
Did you get lost in the moment for a second?
Yeah, especially when it's a really romantic scene. But the thing about me and Hen was that, like, I don't know. We were so like friends and professional that it, like, there was nothing. Like, and I mean this with such sincerity. There was nothing. It was just like a lovely kiss. Like there wasn't. Do you know what I mean? You're like it was like a movie. Like.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, and it wasn't meant to be. So
fine.
I think all of that kind of played into it.
Oh my God, I need to see the fucking film now.
I'm dying.
I think you'll really like it.
A rom-com is my favourite type of film, especially a Christmas rom-com.
Well, and it's a very, very, very British rom-com in that it's like more than a rom-com.
And it's got
you
George
kind
Michael
of get
music.
More, and it's got George Michael music all over the shop. And then there's his unreleased one that he made right before he died, and it's rolling on the credits.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of amazing that Paul in all the screenings was like, stay for the credits. And I'm like, stop telling everyone what to do. Like, if they want to stay, they can just like...
Oh, I definitely want to see it.
I heard you on Greg James's breakfast show. Like, you were doing a couple of stints on it, weren't you? Or not. Maybe you were just doing one, but he told me that you liked the podcast. That's the reason.
Yes. Yeah,
that's the reason you're here. So thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg. Greg.
But yeah, you were doing like, I don't know what this game is that he does, but you were like, honestly, you hate the Pogues song? Fairy Tale of Christmas.
It's really bad.
Fairy Tale of New York, is it?
Yeah, it's just one of those songs that just makes me sad every time. Of all the Christmas songs, you've got so many amazing options. And then there's, and then with that one, I just, you're like, come on, we can sing a proper Christmas.
But I feel like maybe you should go to one of the Pogues Brixton Academy Christmas shows just to really solidify whether you love it or hate it.
Very good.
That is so drunk and so Irish and kind of brilliant, but like...
Like, I love we shot in Belfast for 10 years. I love Irish... Course. Sing song in the pub, get it down your neck, all that. So I love it. I absolutely love it. But there's just, so, I don't know.
So you lived in Belfast doing Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I mean, we were there for however long we had to be there. And on the last couple of seasons, we were there for basically like 10
months,
11 months.
Did you understand the accent?
Oh, how about you?
My dad was from there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I thought
it's well trendy.
Everyone said modern and patron.
Yeah.
And film.
Do they still say
film?
Film.
Okay, yeah.
Film. Yeah, but people don't, do they?
Yeah. So I've got like a lot of connections to you, which I feel like I need to spell out.
Okay.
Yes. Does the name, this will be slightly embarrassing if it doesn't, does the captain, do you know the captain?
The captain.
Okay, Dave Morgan.
Right.
One of the
cameramen. Yes.
The captain is my best
friend. My brother
friend's.
Will be like, yes, the captain.
Well, your brother worked on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, my brother
as well.
Worked on Game of Thrones. He's in the camera department.
Was he on the last series?
He was on the last series, and we lived together when we were filming.
Do you get on well?
We do. I mean, we hadn't lived together for a very long time because we both went to boarding school, like in that amount of time when by the time we started living together in Belfast. And so there were a few like, Ben, seriously, I need you to like screw that jar back on that jam and I need you to pop it in the cupboard, like do it for him. And then like he had to wash up only his stuff and not.
Oh, wow.
Do you know
proper
what I mean?
Flat share, right.
But it was the most magic thing in the world coming back home and having Ben there. Mm. Like every once in a while, I'd be in the bath and the door would be closed and we'd just be having, like, he'd get in after a night out or whatever and then we'd be having a chat and be like, how was your day? It was just lovely. We get on really well.
Is he older or younger?
He's older. He's like, I think they would, you'd call us Irish twins, isn't that what they? So he's like a year
within
and a
year.
Half. Yeah, or not quite
two
within a year.
Two under two.
Two under two. Yeah, exactly. So that's Ben and I. So we're really close.
So, growing up,
yes,
it was you and Ben,
me and Ben,
and then your parents, and like who was cooking?
My dad.
And your
my
dad's
mum
passed away.
My dad's passed away. Yeah.
So sorry.
Food is like. When I think about my childhood and I think about my family, it's just food. It's
really?
Just like, that was how my dad expressed love. Obviously, he loved
us. Yeah,
and
of course.
He expressed that in every other way. But my mum does three things and she does them very well.
Come on.
She hasn't done the chocolate mousse in a very long time, but she makes a mean chocolate mousse because she just would inhale like a... If you gave her a slab of dairy milk the size of the table, it'd be probably gone in about four bites. Like she's a chocoholic. And then she would do lamb chops and salad in a bag.
Mum's kind of woman.
She just lamb chops.
And salad in a bag, love it.
My mum loves a good lamb chop. So she would do that and we would do that and salad in a bag. And then to the point where it was so infamous that like my dad was the only one who did the cooking in the village that we now live in where we're all really, really close.
Do you all live in the same village?
No. As in our village where we live is like a proper community. And when I was in hospital, our amazing neighbours came to the hospital with lamb chops and salad in a bag.
Oh, lamb chops and salad.
Do you know what I mean? Because it was just like, our family's kind of... But my dad would cook as kids, you know, the smell of like dough. He would make us homemade pizzas with like wholemeal dough. And then he'd make us chicken curries and he'd make us... But all of it, now I know, was like with a superior palate. Do you know what I mean? Like none of it was bland. So when I was a kid, I didn't know how to say spicy. So I used to call it minty. So my dad would be like, it's a bit minty. But so it would be me with a vat of yogurt with pretty much anything he'd cook. Yeah, because he loved chili.
Amazing.
My brother loved chili.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we... his spag bowls always had like... Chili. Kidneys in and like, do you know what I mean? Like he really went there.
Wow. Some people
but
put chicken livers
such,
in, don't they?
Chicken livers. Yeah. So I don't mean kidney, I mean chicken livers
in,
which I'd always try and navigate around.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I just...
Oh, wow. Like proper food.
Proper foodie. But then he'd also make a club sandwich that was like the greatest thing you'd ever eaten. Like, he just would make the most simple food superior.
What did he put in his club? Was it everything just that's in a club?
Everything,
sandwich?
But like, he'd get like the best bread, and then it'd be toasted to perfection, and then he'd have the best mayonnaise, and then he'd have like your iceberg lettuce and your smoky thick cut bacon, and then he'd marinate that chicken in like white wine and garlic.
No, he wouldn't.
And like grill it like that and flat iron it himself, like pound it out. He's there butchering in the kitchen all the time. Pound it out and then have the next layer of bread, and then there'd be your fresh tomatoes and your, like, it's just a all of the stuff's just regular, but you pimped it, basically, all of the food that we would eat.
What did he do as a job?
He was a sound designer for the theatre, but he started life as a, well, he started life as an art student and then as a roadie in a band, and like was just tried every drug under the planet and like was a massive hippie, and then found his way into sound, and then was a resident at the National for ages, for like 14 Amazing. Years. Did musicals, toured around the world. Like,
and
yeah.
What, did your mum work?
Yeah. My mum is, I'm going to put it really basically because I still don't quite get it, a businesswoman and always has been. So she was, my dad was this like freewheeling, free-loving, creative hippie. And my mum was, so if you imagine like when they met, and then my mum was like the 70s glamazon with her red Revlon nails and her red lips and her like perm.
So where was he getting all his influences from? Or
so he literally, food is such a big part. Like you could try, I could tell you all my parents' stories from like when they first tried garlic, when they first, what their best meal was, that kind of
full
thing.
Full of nostalgia then.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Like my dad was always into food as a kid. He was from Wolverhampton. And his mum was like, you know, she cooked, but it was never full of like massive amounts of flavour, but he got lovely food. And then for his, I can't remember what birthday it must have been, but he was young. I think he was like under 10. They're like, what do you want to do for your birthday? And he was like, I want to go to this restaurant. And they're like, right then, we'll go to this restaurant. And that's where he tried, really, I think that's the first time we went, he tried garlic. And then they were well off enough to go on holidays. And so he went to Spain or to France. And that was when he tried different spices, different flavours, and just blew his mind. And from then on, no matter how poor he was, no matter how little money he had, because he went through most of his life with like not two pennies to put together, he would get his tin of sardines and his thing of rice and do whatever he could to like make it into like...
Oh, I love him. Yeah. This sounds amazing.
And he'd try food from all over the world.
He passed away?
Yeah, 3 years ago. Yeah.
So sorry.
But I'd be speaking about him and his food love with just the same amount of vigour as I would if he was still here.
Are you a good cook?
I can be a good cook. Like, if you give me an Ottolenghi cookbook, I'll go mad.
Yeah.
Like, me and my brother did all the Christmas cooking.
What was on the menu?
So we did a turkey, which hilariously was the only thing that didn't work. And then we had like 24 people round, and we did, I think we did like 15 different sides.
Oh, wow, okay.
So we just essentially got Ottolenghi and Jelena's cookbook.
Oh,
yeah,
love Jelena. Did you do a roasted sprout?
Yes, we did a roasted sprout. We did that kale, and we did, I can't remember what else we did, but we did loads and loads. And people just basically ignored the turkey, which
was
half-cooked.
What happened to the, it was half-cooked.
With the it was a new oven. And we just didn't quite, and we sort of weren't paying attention to it. But it was this whopping great big turkey.
Oh, bloody hell.
And then like... And because also my brother's a vegetarian, so we sort of needed to, maybe that's why he didn't really.
Oh yeah, sabotage.
Yeah, exactly. Sabotage the turkey.
What are you doing this Christmas?
I'm taking my mum to India. My mum and my brother to India for 2 weeks. And yeah. Because it's my mum's 70th in January.
Fantastic.
So she didn't want a party, so I was like, oh, I'm going to surprise her with that.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you are part Indian.
Yeah. So my granny was half Indian. And so we've, as a family, I went when I was 16 and scattered her ashes after she died in like back pranced around northern India and did that. My mum and my dad have been to India. My mum used to work in India. My brother's never been, but we've never been as a family. So I wanted to plan this like pilgrimage sort of thing. And then we've got really, really good friends who are there. So on actual Christmas Day, I think we're spending it with like 40 people, like in an Indian house with
Amazing.
And I'm just so excited. It's going to be really good.
Cheers. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. What a pleasure to meet you. Honestly, I mean, I've been watching you on screen for how many years? How many years was it? 7, 8?
Well, so it was 8 seasons, but 10 years.
I mean, it's been a while.
God, that champagne.
I love champagne.
Me too.
Oh, that is good.
Makes me happy.
That's exactly it. I could be in any pub anywhere and be like, don't care what kind it is, babe, just bring it over.
It gives you bad breath, though.
Does it?
I feel like it does. Maybe it's Prosecco that gives bad breath. I don't know, but I always feel like champagne breath is not the one.
I think it's all right.
Maybe like the better it is, the less bad breath you get.
Less halitosis, yeah.
New advertising for fancy champagne. Exactly. Doesn't give you bad breath.
I think this tastes lovely.
So on your request, you asked for chicken soup.
I did. Because I hear about it so much and I love chicken soup. And that is the one my dad would make chicken stock all the time, which now we call bone broth.
Yeah.
But like back before, it was just chicken stock.
You don't have to have the matzo ball if you don't want it.
But you can have the matzo ball. That will,
do you know what I mean? I've never actually
you gotta have
a matzo ball.
Yeah.
Is it gonna make you have to go to the loo if you have the matzo ball?
Not today.
Fine, perfect. I don't care.
Are you actually gluten intolerant?
It's one of those things, right? Gluten, this is the fine print they don't tell you. When you go through all of your varying things of like, oh, this is good for you, I'm going to do exactly what the paper tells me to do and I'm not going to do it, when you take out gluten for a significant amount of time, popping it back in, pain. The dairy thing is real.
That's
why
you shouldn't take out gluten.
But yeah, no, I mean, my mum is very, when I've attempted it and actually felt much better for it.
You do. And you absolutely do. So maybe it's just that before I took out the gluten, I wasn't aware of the fact that I was bloated all the time.
How much gluten did you eat?
Not that much. As much as the next person. Yeah.
But but what do you do about bread now? Because I love bread so much. Gluten free bread is shit.
Yes, it's bad. If I'm going to eat bread, I'm going to eat bread.
Go out with a bang.
Hells yeah.
Okay,
if I'm going to do it, there is no point in like. I found there was one gluten free bread that I found in America that basically just tasted like sugar and I loved it because it was squidgy and it tasted like banana bread.
So. Jessie.
Yeah.
She's a super foodie.
Yeah, I'm a super foodie. Yeah. I really am. I'm really kind of a bit anxious now. No.
Mum, your chicken soup, don't worry.
I haven't had a home cooked meal and I cannot tell you how long.
Have
really?
You been doing so,
for real?
So much?
Yeah, I've not been able to go home because my mum, since my dad died, has like made it her mission, God love her, to be good at cooking. So she's always like, no, I've got to cook for you, And she gets really like, I must be really good at cooking. And it's genuinely got so much better. But I just don't cook for myself. And I don't know whether it's like I'm grieving my dad or whatever
chops.
It is. No, I mean, I eat red meat really, really rarely. Because I'm trying to
But that's so sad that now it feels slightly bittersweet for you to cook.
Yeah, there's something in it. But like if I'm cooking for other people, let me at it. Like I love it. I absolutely love it. And I challenge my dad in the kitchen, which is just like a little bit testy. I'm just a little bit, I get a little bit stressed. But so I love the preparation of it and all of it.
So you've always eaten really well throughout
always
your life.
Always eaten. Yeah, my
and
dad really screwed
on.
Us in that sense. Because I never craved, if my mum listens to this, she'd be like, yes, you did. We never had...
rubbish food.
Yeah, we didn't. Like when I was a kid, we'd have like a packet of crisps after swimming or whatever. And we used to have those, the golden syrup bars and the Jamaican ginger.
Oh yeah, lovely.
Like after, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember like after swimming and all that. But overall, we would always, I was 24 before I realised that people didn't always sit down to eat a meal together. Like I literally, it was just so much like breathing. Like,
What did you eat at boarding school?
Oh God, boarding school food.
Was it terrible?
Yeah, but kind of good terrible.
Okay. Was it like kind of custard and
just
biscuits?
Just custard, please.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
And did they do the chocolate custard?
They did the chocolate custard.
Yeah, I love
custard.
The chocolate.
It's the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
Just custard. You just get like school dinners. But like there were to my palate now, there's something so comforting about like salty, bland, thin cut beef with like a bit of slightly lumpy gravy with your boiled potatoes and your boiled carrots. There's something about it where you're like, do you know what? That's just
Do you like plain food then?
I genuinely don't eat plain food.
Oh.
At all.
Do you bring your own
packed
lunch?
Yeah.
Because you can't trust it.
Mainly because in recent years, if I'm on a plane, for the amount of time that you'd need to eat a meal on it, someone taught me once that if you want to conquer jet lag, don't eat on the flight, which is sometimes really, obviously really hard. So like you'd have some nuts or you'd have like whatever. And I'm going to sound like I've got a fucking eating disorder, which I don't, but it's, if you try to not eat a big meal at least on the plane, your jet lag is helped when you land because your stomach
that's
gets
that's where we're going wrong. We're having the wine, the rom-com.
I have everything.
But when I'm on the plane, I'm going to work. Tell me about it. Every time I sit down, I'm like, yes, I will start with the champagne and then I'm just on water. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I guess you need to be like on it as soon as
soon as I land, sometimes I go straight into a thing. Oh. And if I'm there with like a big, bloated, full belly and feeling a little bit warm.
Amelia, do you get recognised wherever you go?
Yeah.
Is it boring?
It's just sometimes it can be frustrating for the people that you're with and you're like, let's say, like this happens to me so many times. If I'm walking with like a girlfriend, let's say, we're having a proper gossip, we're having a catch up, we're like having like a heart to heart of some kind, we're getting into it. And then someone comes up and is like, please, please, can I have a photo? And you're sort of in the middle of like someone's crying or we're getting into it. And then you're like, I shouldn't be saying things so loud. And then the friend that you're with feels really awkward and then it turns into a weird thing. And then you're like, sorry to you and sorry to you, but I don't quite know how to navigate what this is. So recently, and I think it is actually probably since after my dad died, because I went through 3 years of genuinely having 7 days off, like in three solid years.
Oh, God.
Because I was doing, I did Game of Thrones season 7, which lasted like 11 months when I had about 7 days and went into Star Wars, which then extended. So we were only meant to shoot 6 months and then it turned into a year.
Has Star Wars come out yet?
That was been and gone.
Oh.
Yeah. The next ones, I did Star Wars, the Han Solo story.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
It's very all good.
Donald Glover was it?
But yes.
He was the most and handsome, charming
And we got him right before,
Before what?
Before kind of everything. The like mega rise of Donald. But so in that time I was like, I can't begin to describe how tired I was because then I went into that and then went into Star Wars and then went straight into Game of Thrones and we did that for a year and then we finished and then like I was just knackered and that was at a time when people were stopping me quite a lot. So I was genuinely walking through an airport like and I just suddenly started having what I can only believe to be a panic attack brought on by like complete exhaustion. And was just on the phone to my I was on the phone to my mum because I called her and I was like, I feel like I can't breathe. I feel like I don't know what's going on. She was like, take a sit down. You're all good. And then I'm there and then the tears are coming out.
And I'm crying
down to try and not be like, I'm sitting on this seat in the gate. And this guy's like, can I get a selfie? And I was like, I can't breathe. I'm really sorry. Just having a minute. Can I just... It was after a few moments like that where you're just like, I don't know how to do this. So I started to say, I'm not going to take a photo, but I will sign something. Because then as soon as you sign something, you have to have an interaction with that person. As opposed to someone just going, oi, give us a selfie and then goodbye. It turns into... right, what's your name? Who am I making it out to? And then you have a little chat and then you're actually having like a truthful human to human thing as opposed to it being this other thing, which probably isn't nice for them and it probably isn't nice for you.
But I wonder, because like you've got such a reputation of being like a lovely person too. But it's true, like you're like the hot one, but also the loveliest person. And but that thing of people feeling like they can approach you because you appear approachable, and therefore you being able to just be like, guys, you know what, I'm not having a great day, do you mind, I feel a bit shit.
There's just a few moments, because when you're in like a big public space, you'll kind of, you got to get from A to B, and normally you're kind of in a bit of a, and when you're, I mean, I don't know if this is bad to say, but when you're like a little girl, and you sort of get physically grabbed, your gut instinct is like, danger.
Yeah, of course.
And then it's just someone going, can I have a selfie?
Yeah, but it's intrusive though, isn't it?
Then because I like people and I like interacting with human beings, and that's the thing I miss the most about anonymity, is like, I just like going into shops and like having a chat. Like, and I just like chatting,
me
obviously.
Too.
And so when that goes, you feel a bit... So then when someone's asking me for a selfie, I want to be able to provide for them what it is that they're after. And I feel like I signed up for it. Like, I knew what was going on. So I've just been trying to navigate how I can do it without feeling like my soul is completely empty because they don't really want to talk to you. I know that sounds really sad.
No, they just want to be seen with you.
Yeah, and then you're like, nice to meet you. My name is Amelia. When you do like a signing thing, then you get to actually look into their eyes and have like a, like a proper human thing. Because it's a really weird thing.
But when did it start getting really weird?
it started to get to like fever pitch around season 7 when I was going through this thing of being so tired all the time. I got woken up on a plane. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I was fast asleep against the window, had like drool. I knew I had drool because you know when you wake up and you're like,
yeah.
And I was being woken up by someone shaking me awake and was like, can I get a selfie? And I was like, babe, I'm really sorry, but I've only got like an hour to sleep and I kind of need it. Like, okay.
Fuck
and so
off.
There's this like,
you can't say fuck off, but fuck off. That's
I think
rude.
You should say. That why did they not protect you? You weren't in economy, Amelia. Good
on
God.
On that particular one, no, it was an easy jet, I think. No, that was, I can't remember. Because when you're flying to Belfast and you just want to get
easy,
home.
Yeah.
Because I would do, on the last, we would wrap on like, hopefully we would wrap at like 7 on a Friday night.
Yeah,
and I would, exactly, and I would, literally, there was an AD on the show who was like, I've never seen anyone rap quicker than you. Like, because I'm like, what? The hair and makeup girls want to go home. They don't want to wait around for me.
So
I don't want to go home.
So yeah. You mean home London?
Home London, yeah. So I would whip that wig off as quickly as we could do it.
How
so
long
that
did
everyone
that take?
Could go off for a drink. I mean, sometimes I'm literally like ripping skin off as I'm pulling off that ball cap trying to get in the car to get on the plane. And then I would land in London at like 11 on a Friday night. And then I'd go out with my mates to the pub and stay up and like see them and then have Saturday. And then Sunday morning, I'd get back on a plane and go to Belfast.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So those kind of flights where you're, I was just trying so hard to like still have a life of some kind when you're shooting those kind of things. But which is why living with your brother is kind of amazing.
Yeah. And I guess, yeah, it's that juggling act. And then you just kind of feel like you're not really doing anything that brilliantly.
Exactly.
You feel apologetic to your friends. Yeah. Maybe like a partner. It's like,
no, that's it. And then your hours, sometimes we'd be doing like from like waking up from getting in the car to getting back home to the flat, you sometimes would have done like a 14-hour day. And when you're doing 6-day weeks, and we're I'm complaining about a very cushy job.
No, I understand it. Mum, it's a 10 out of 10.
Oh my God,
you don't think it needs some salt?
No. Listeners, okay. You need to I've heard this being eaten before because I'm obsessively listening to a podcast and always going, what does it taste like? What does it taste like? It tastes like heaven.
Got to try the mats.
That is absolutely amazing. And at this time of year, I absolutely will with a bit of my.
Oh my God.
They are
all
good.
Day. All day
you need to
long.
Get the just
This is genuinely food for your soul. Mm. This is like. Oh my God. You'd be ill just to eat this all the time.
I know. Can we talk about.
Yes.
Your. Double brain hemorrhage, stroke, aneurysm, post first season of Game of Thrones. I can't even imagine. You were how old?
I was 22. Just 23. Oh, God, what was I? I keep
you were bloody
now.
Young.
I was 22, 23, which one I genuinely keep forgetting. Someone will be like, quick maths, Amelia. Well done. So I was young, but I was... so great, like literally I'd seen one television camera before doing Game of Thrones. So like the build up to the first brain hemorrhage was massive because it was the first season of the show was genuinely one of the most happiest seasons we've ever done because it was everyone just being like, I don't know, let's try it.
Did you think it was going to be a big thing?
This is the thing that, I mean, with such sincerity, I was just so over the moon to have a job. Like, everyone keeps being like, but you're doing HBO and, you know, and now I'm like, oh, yeah, I get it. I absolutely get why someone would be like, oh, did you feel weird about signing up for that many seasons? Or, like, were you aware of what it was going to be? But I cannot stress enough how little I knew about anything. So I was just over the moon to be a part of something. And I think maybe the back of my brain was like, oh, this is, like, a very big thing. But I've never, ever, ever wanted to, again, this is instilled from family stuff, but like I've never wanted to be reliant on success or on my job from being the thing that makes me feel value. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So I would always err on the side of caution. I would always be like, yeah, but we don't know. And we don't know. And I could get fired at any point.
Slightly
and I get,
half empty?
Yeah, like, kind of kind like of... My glass is always overspilling for people, but for my own stuff and my own work, I'm always like, well, let's just assume it's going to be crap.
Well, it's a way of protecting yourself, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah.
100 million percent.
I do, Mum.
Yes, please.
I'll get it.
So good. You wrap Game of Thrones, or had it come out by this point?
No, we'd wrapped it.
So you having a bit of time off, first kind of proper acting job, and you're like fucking, and then what happened?
And I got, so yeah, then I went to, so we wrapped that at Christmas and then I went to America and did a bit of press for the show. Where could they, Emilia Clarke, what do you have the same as Emilia Clarke, me and Sean Bean? On a panel, very funny. And then I got American agents and then like just doing all of that kind of stuff. And then came back to my flat in Dalston, head spinning, not really knowing what I'm meant to be doing, but like reading exciting scripts from America and feeling like, oh my God, this is really exciting. This is really huge. I have a career. And then was in the gym one morning and like dragged myself there, like fully, it was so tired, but was on a television show and was being an actress and was like, I'm now meant to work out. Yeah. Right, okay, so I'm going to do what everyone is in society is telling me to do and I'm going to get on a treadmill. And I was with, I'd got this personal trainer from the gym. So he was working me out and I was doing the plank. And no, before then, I remember I was doing, I was on like the cross train or whatever and just went, oh my God, I'm so tired. No, push through it, push through it, push through it. And then I'd do another thing and be like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I'd be like, no, push through, you can do it. And then doing the plank and I suddenly went, oh my God, I've got the most excruciating head. I don't know what's going on.
You were basically having a hemorrhage
it,
then.
It's literally, I remember it really, really, obviously really vividly. It's like an elastic band just went like snap around your brain. Oh. Like that's the only way I can describe it.
So you could actually feel that sensation.
Oh my God, yeah. And it was just like, boom, in a second, suddenly... You imagine your whole brain is just being shrink wrapped and squeezed and like, and then I started to feel incredibly ill and I like crawled to the loo. It was being really, I'm not going to do this while we're eating, but not well.
This is all at the gym.
This is all at the gym and the loo in the gym. And then this woman whose face all I knew was her voice put me in the recovery position and got the ambulance to come and they didn't know what it was. And they were like, this is really weird. Cause
you're young
and like, you're just tired. And I kept but when I was being ill, I knew I was being brain damaged. I was in that toilet stall just being like, I absolutely know this is brain damage and it's not happening. Like it's 100% not happening. This is not the way my life is going to go. I'm going to be an actress. And it was just like the, as strong as the pain was this like fight that was just like not happening. Wiggling my fingers and toes, so I was like, okay, what's brain damage? Brain damage is you're going to be paralyzed. Okay, so you're probably slipping into a coma, so you probably shouldn't go to sleep. So like move your fingers and toes, move your legs. Where's your mum from? What's your dad's name? What are lines from the show? Like,
oh my God,
what's your full name? Like trying to keep myself awake, literally, and like moving. No, I was kind of they didn't know what it was, so they couldn't give me any drugs. And so, I was just there and like.
Did they give you an MRI scan?
They did an MRI scan.
It took them a really long time.
Because you couldn't speak.
Yeah, and it was the weirdest thing. So I've never said this before, but it was the strangest thing. I remember really vividly being in, they'd put me in a room in A&E, like just off the main bit. And it was a rowdy Saturday night. And I'm drifting in and out of consciousness and like still haven't had any pain medication, and I got my mum, my dad and my brother all in the room with me, and I just can't move my head, I can't do anything, and I hear what is obviously someone just, I'm quite jumpy anyway, but I heard what was someone obviously throwing a chair, or like it started to get rowdy,
some idiot,
because it's a Saturday night and you've got a lot of like, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I thought it was a gunshot, and apparently I bolted upright and was like, lock the door, and then just passed out again. Because I there was like some weird bit of my brain that was like aware of danger and was like, family must be safe, and just went.
Hell.
Anyway, that was all very dramatic. Then the nurse saw the nurse whose husband was a brain surgeon was like, I think you need a brain scan. I think that's what you need. And then after that, they realised what it was, and like I got into the most amazing hospital.
Nurse.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
I mean.
It was
blood. I mean, so it took a while for them to work it out.
Well, I think probably because she was so young.
Yeah. Mm.
They just didn't imagine.
No one assumed. No one assumed that that's what it would be. And they kept, you know, to be honest, they're a bit like, You're taking any drugs? Yeah, like, what are you doing?
Think and it's drugs with strokes,
well, yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
In young people.
In young people, yeah. And I was just so lucky. At like every turn, I was just crazy, crazy lucky.
Had you had the double hemorrhage by that point?
No, so that was just one.
Christ.
And then they said another one.
Well, yeah. So that was it. So then they were we did the operation. But there was.
So what is the operation that they would do?
So with this one, they did a non-invasive one. So they go through your femur artery and they go all the way around your heart and into your brain, and they plug it with little wires. And so, because if you imagine that when your brain is being formed, I was born with a weakness which you can never detect. And as your brain goes into the two sides, that weakness is reflected on, but mirrored on both sides. So this is basically like a little bit of your vein is just a bit weaker. So as the blood pumps around, it just turns into a bubble.
So is that an aneurysm?
That's an aneurysm. Yeah. So you can see that on a scan. Yeah. And then if you get enough blood pressure going round, so like I've never done cocaine, because that would have killed me on the spot. Because the amount of blood pressure that goes around when you're doing that. And so with that bleed, like as it's open, it's just free blood going around, and it'll just kill whatever bit
but
of the brain
kind
that the blood
of
isn't
lucky
going.
To be alive.
Well,
because
yeah,
had you been in the wrong place
completely
at the wrong time
completely.
On a beach in Thailand,
and my brain was smart. What it did was, so when you've got when there's a bit of your brain that doesn't get any blood to it, it dies, it's gone. But what my brain did then was find another way around, and then it just kept running. I'm still getting a lot of free blood in the body, which like your body is not used to and doesn't really like. But so what they did is they filled
that. When you
that,
say free blood?
Like loose, like just blood, not in a vein. So just in your
internal
brain.
Internal bleeding?
Internal bleeding, yeah,
you still
in your
get
brain.
It?
No, as in that's what happens.
Oh, right,
that's
okay,
what
right.
was happening.
Okay, fine, good. Right.
And then, so then that little bit they fill with wires so that the blood can continue going around on its normal course and doesn't just keep escaping. So that was the first procedure. And then they were like, you've got another one on the other side. It's too small to operate on. Just keep an eye on it. And then 2 years later, I'm doing a play on Broadway. And I'm on the last day of my SAG medical. So I went, because I was getting biannual scans at that point, or like every 6 months
health.
Or something.
SAG medical is...
Do you have
medical
insurance?
Yeah, it's just insurance. Yeah,
medical insurance. So, yeah.
So I went in and they were like, you need to operate on this now. It's actually doubled in size since your last scan. So I was like, oh, I don't really want to, but okay.
Got to go to Broadway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just finished the play. So I was like, what am I going to do next? And was just beginning to feel a little bit stronger from the first one. And they were like, we'll just do the same procedure. So to prevent it from ever, we'll put the wires in so that it like strengthens that little vulnerable
it
bubble
like
that
a really
burst.
Petrifying operation.
Yeah, so then I was like, okay, fine, but I'll be round in 2 hours, and they made it all cushy and it was all cool. And then when I come round, they've brought me round because the wires got stuck and it was a bigger bleed than the last time. And they were like, the only way that we're gonna save you is if we cut your head open and do it the old-fashioned way, which is clamping it. So that's when they cut your head open. I'm so sorry, listeners.
No.
Cut your head open and take out a bit of your skull, and then they go in, and then that little balloon, they just get a clamp and just clamp it at there. So that's sturdy as anything. Like the coppers.
So you've still got the balloon in there, but
so,
it's clamped.
Well, no, because it ruptured.
And then they pop it.
Probably all gone now, somewhere in my brain. But then they clamp it. But then what you're recovering from is you're recovering from open brain surgery as well as the bleed. And then I'd like died for a minute, and they told my parents I was not going to make it, and then they told my parents I was going to be permanently paralyzed. And then this is all happening in like an 8, 9, 10 hour operation.
You were supposed to just go in for a procedure.
Yeah, and it, because it sometimes goes wrong sometimes, and this was obviously just a bit too
what was
small.
The repercussions once you woke up?
Once I woke up, it was just like, both times, waking up after that kind of surgery, both times, in the beginning, you really can't move. So, like, my vision was just, like, what I could see here. And you can only, it's this mad thing. I've got such a sense memory of both times coming round and being, like, you're aware of the noises first, but you've never been in the room before and you have no idea what's happened. You've no idea what's going on. You're trying to, like, piece everything together and work it all out. And then the main thing that happens when you've had that kind of surgery is the first week and a half, you're just sick to your stomach, and all you want is water, but then you throw it up immediately.
Oh, so it's God.
This like this parched thirst thing that you, and it's because you've had all of the tubes down your throat and all that stuff. So the second one, it took me a really long time to kind of get myself together. Whereas with the first one, because it wasn't such an invasive thing, I think it was, I was aware of how much pain I was in, and I was aware of all of that kind of stuff. But that happened quicker than with the second one, where I kind of just felt like out of it the entire time.
Was it very, I mean, did people talk about it at the time? Because I've only heard about this recently.
Well, no, so Amelia, I kept it silent until 8 months ago.
So how did it impact on, did you have to delay going back to Game of Thrones?
No, so that was the thing, because I didn't, with the first one, I couldn't let them know what had happened until they knew I wasn't going to die. So it took us three weeks to be like, sorry for not answering the old emails. I've just been a bit
ill.
I'm fine, by the way. Everything's great. I'm totally fine. I'm going to be back to work. Nothing's wrong with me. It's all good. Because I just was consistently so scared of being fired for whatever reason. So I was just like,
not fair.
No, I know. But that was me more than, I had no idea how well taken care of I was.
So you set up the charity recently. Yeah. Well, you launched it this year.
We launched it 8 months ago. And from the first one, I was like, I have to, I've my life has been saved. I've got to give back. I have to give back. And was just going to get like a sofa for the family room, because the family room, like, my parents would never complain, but like they looked in pain all the time. And then I was like, oh no, what can I do for the nurses? How can I give back that way? And we were trying to figure it out. And every time I'd think about it, I was like, no, we can't just get, you know, obviously we sent them nice things, but like, I wanted to actually do something significant. And then when the second one happened, I was just like, I'm meant to be here. And so I need to like do something with this. Like, this is ridiculous that I'm still alive and here. And I'm here because of all these amazing people. So then we started brainstorming as to what it could be. And then I wasn't going to tell my story, because I would go in and out of, like, I'd be doing press. And then I'd suddenly go, Amelia, imagine you're telling your story right now. And it freaked me out, and I just felt not ready, because I kept it secret from everyone for so long. And I was so scared, and I was so ashamed, and I was so all of those things. And then, because it was my mum who's kind of created this with me.
Oh, great.
Amazing businesswoman, amazing having your mum. She also, they always said it was genetic. And then January after my dad died, so it was 2017, she woke up with vertigo, and they thought she was having a stroke, so they took her into the hospital, and then she did a brain scan and saw that she had an aneurysm and it hadn't ruptured. So she had to have the preventative procedure that went amazingly and all good. And then we just slowly but surely worked out what it is that we wanted to do, and then we tried to figure out how we could do it without telling my story. And then I was like, well, no one would care, so I have to do it, and we've got to do it. And then as soon as I did, it was like, oh, wow, that's actually a real weight off. Because I'd get interviewed all the time, and they'd be like, what's happened to you in your life? And I'm like, nothing. Just been doing this TV show. Like, that's it. There's nothing I can speak to. And so then getting to say it was kind of liberating and frightening.
How did you choose to say it? Like,
so I did a piece in The New Yorker, because I didn't want a big song and dance. I basically was just like, people are going to be like, oh, celebrity sob story, like we care.
But then they ended up with pictures of you in hospital in the mail online.
I know. Well, that was something that I put that picture of myself up, because I was like, this picture's going to like just address the problem even more. And they see me standing there looking all capable, having done all the stuff that I've done.
And then it becomes kind of clickbaity. But then more people read about it.
Yeah, right? No, exactly. So like, that's fine. You want to read about the thing that happened to me, and therefore reading about the charity and how they can help, then that'd be really good.
So how does the charity help? Is it just,
So the charity itself is a grant-giving charity.
What's it called, first of all?
Same You.
Same You.
SameYou.org. There you go, listeners.
Good. Yeah, good.
So we are essentially a grant-giving body. So people will come and say, we need money to do this, and the board and everyone will get together and decide, yes, that's something. And then we will oversee that project and make sure that it's all...
Who do you think was most significant in your recovery?
My recovery, I mean...
Besides your parents?
Significant in my recovery, this is going to sound real naff. Get ready for it, ladies and gentlemen. Genuinely, the most significant person in my recovery was Mother of Dragons. She was the actual thing that got me out of bed every day. Yeah, okay. Fully. So the show, like... You've got to be on... Imagine if it happened to you and you've got to be on stage. Guess what? You're probably getting on stage. You've got, like, it's... Do you know what I mean? It's your identity. It's the thing that you get to not sit there and go, oh, my God, I feel really awful. And you go, yeah, complete escapism, exactly. So it turned into that. I think genuinely that the show was absolutely the thing that just like saved me, because it distracted me. It got me back to work. Yes, I was exhausted. Yes, I still had this crazy amount of fatigue and like mad anxiety. I thought I was going to die all the time and couldn't tell anyone. I was feeling a bit kind of... So then because I wasn't saying to anyone, it became this thing of like, well, then she's... My character is the thing that's going to... So then every job that I did, I would kind of just funnel it all into there and not really look at it at all, and just kind of was aware that I was going to do a charity later on and was going to try and help and bring it back. And
do you think maybe that's why you work so hard as well? Is it like, is it a way of kind of dealing and coping with this fact that you've had these pretty...
Yeah, I mean, I've always... Because my dad was in the crew, the thing that he like instilled in me was professionalism, and like, you turn up on time and you're not a dick and you know your lines and you are nice to everyone.
Make your marks.
Like it's...
Do your marks.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like, it's just really simple, and that's like, just be a professional. Like, at all turns, just be a professional, because then you can't go wrong. Like, no matter how well you've done in that scene or whatever, like, you can just be nice. Just be like a good person. And so regardless of the brain hemorrhages, I would have always put my everything into it. But I definitely think that I probably did it with much more ferocity. Like, I genuinely was more worried about getting fired than I was about dying. You know what I mean? Because that's like a rational thing you can think about. Like, when you're early 20s and you've got to consider your own mortality, I just didn't. My dad died, and then I was like, oh, death. Right, yeah.
How old was your dad when he died?
69. He's just too young. Yeah, too young.
She said he's 68.
Yeah, no, my mom's 70. Like, it was just way too young. But that made me think about death more than being close to it and having, you know, been very close to it. Thank you.
It isn't cat's vomit. It's actually amazing. Anchovy emulsion.
My favourite.
Okay, great.
I love anchovy. Perfect.
But it does look a bit like cat's vomit.
What do you do with your potatoes?
I don't know. Put them in a bowl. Do you want me to do them? Sorry.
Yeah, only because I want to serve up the monkfish.
All right.
Do you like monkfish?
Yes! Okay, the good. King of the fishes!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
That monkfish is so good.
Is it?
That is so good.
You're so sweet.
No, I'm not being sweet. I'm being completely honest.
About it.
Mm-mm. That is delicious. Yum. Okay, so you listen to this podcast. You know what the questions are. Last Supper. Let's go.
I know, this is a question that I ask myself, people around me, like all the time.
Fine.
And so it changes all the time.
And that's fine.
Right, it would begin... Definitely with oysters,
From anywhere in particular?
I don't know, just really good, juicy, yummy oysters. That doesn't have so much of a memory attached to it, but with some, like, epic bread and butter. And the oysters need to have the red wine, shallot, vinaigrette, and loads of lemon. So it'd be that. And then the rest of my whole meal is basically just dad stuff. Because I was like, if I could have a meal from anywhere, I just want my dad's cooking back. Oh. And then there's so many to choose from that I was really trying to figure out what it was. But if I were to be doing this last meal in, like, Christmas time, then I think it wouldn't be his club sandwich. It wouldn't be his amazing macaroni cheese that I used to have mature cheddar and, like, thick-cut smoky bacon and parmesan and, like, it was next level. It wouldn't be that. It would be... he used to make this beef stew with orange... That was like mental. It was so good with his sweet potato mash alongside it. And then he would always just grill veggies, just like char grilled kind of veggies. And then he made this, the dessert would be a toss up between a crumble with thick custard. I would probably need apple. And I'd need that crumble to be barely cooked. I mean, some chewy bits on the top and then basically raw.
I agree.
As you get closer to the fruit.
But would you do a mixture apple and plum, or is it just apple? I think classic.
Maybe apple and blackberry, because he used to have that as a kid quite a lot. But then my dad, it would either be that, or it would be, my dad used to make poached red wine pears with his homemade amaretto ice cream.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God. Amaretto and little amaretto biscuits. It is the yummiest thing. So he'd always make it look really pretty on the plate, and then you've just got syrup, red wine syrup, and then the poached pear, and then loads of homemade amaretto ice cream.
Amaretto, just the broken up amaretto biscuits the booze. Ice cream. Oh, the booze.
And it makes it really soft. Mm. So it's really, really, really good. And then to drink...
Do you have his recipes?
I've got them in my head. Yeah, because his famous thing he used to do all the time that I definitely can't do myself is just his white wine, ginger, garlic, lemon, chicken, marinated chicken, but you marinate it for like a day and then you just grill it. And then the next morning that sauce that was in it would turn into jelly and you'd have that on bread. It was so good.
You'd have the jelly, the chicken jelly on bread.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you could just have like a spoonful of the jelly and it would just like go with all of this amazing stuff. So that is, but I mean, there's a million other meals that I'm not saying that it would.
And would it be bubbles with it?
Well, so that's the thing. It would definitely, the oysters need the champagne. But then I think with that meal, oh, no way am I kidding. Yeah, it'd be champagne the whole way through. But then finishing off with a dessert wine. And then some chocolates. Like, you know how you do in posh restaurants and you've got the petit fours, exactly. Mm. So you can round it off.
So do you host a lot
when
you have time?
Mm-hmm.
So what was the last dinner party that you did? And what did you cook?
I can't remember what was the last thing I cooked.
What did you have
on the
menu?
The last hosting I've done a lot is just parties. Parties.
And what are the
fat,
drinks?
Dirty house parties.
Okay, so what, oh my God, does that still happen?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I really love my house and it's really easy. And the last one that we did.
But don't people wreck it? Isn't that point not to have a house party?
They've always been all right.
Okay, fine.
I do also have a little kind of bar area in my house.
Oh.
So you can make things really easily.
There's a beer thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you have a pub in your...
Yeah, in my house.
Is that... But you're not... You can only drink one drink, so you just like to entertain for other people.
I really like to entertain for other people. But one of them is beer and the other one is Prosecco.
Oh, on wow, yes.
But then it didn't take me long for me to realise that the Prosecco had run out. And then everyone was like, I want to get that Prosecco on tap. And I was like, oh shit, I should probably refill that one because I was being more concerned about and then I had an IPA on that was 16%. And I didn't realise because I don't really drink beer. I always, whenever I'm in the pub and people are drinking beer, because for a million different reasons I don't really drink it, I'll always have sips of theirs. So I end up drinking other people's, I'm a nightmare. I end up drinking other people's drinks. Because as soon as someone's got a glass of beer in their hand, I'm like, I've got to have it.
Do you like the taste of it?
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Full of bloody gluten.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm like, one glug and then I'm done and then I'll carry on with my champagne.
You know what? You've just given me a proper movie star thing and I really appreciate that because I like that you've got a pub in your house. I'd like to say it's a cocktail bar, sorry. What is it? What would you call it?
It was my shed and then I turned it into a bar.
So it's at the back of your garden?
Yeah.
At the end of your garden? Oh my God.
Because I was like, I don't need a shed. I mean, I've got a courtyard garden. It's got trees in it, but that's it.
So how many people can this shed fit?
Not very many.
Okay.
But we ram it and then I made it glass everywhere. So I wanted it to look like a Great Gatsby bar. Basically, everywhere in my house everything's always a bit weird. You sort of don't know what you're going to get around the corner. Because I didn't buy my own house for ages and ages. I've only been living in this house for about a year and a half. Because I kind of just, sorted other, made sure everyone was good before I... and so I'd had all of this time to dream up what I wanted to look like. And I love interior design. I love it.
Oh, do you want to do mine, Amelia?
So
I'm fucking sick of it.
But I like doing all of the, everything's a little bit weird and a bit magical. So there's, so in the bar, it's bright pink and there's these mirrored tiles everywhere and this kind of a speakeasy sort of vibe. And so there's Prosecco on tap and beer on tap and then all these bonkers glasses and it turns into a piece. Everyone comes round and you're all crumbling in there and there's no room because it's really, really tiny and it just gets a vibe going.
And what's on the playlist?
What's on the playlist?
Do you play
there's
music?
There's a lot of grime. When it's my hardcore friends from... Because, you know what I mean? You're in a circle, mates. And this last party that I had, we basically waited for everyone to leave, and then we just got on their decks and like put on just grime, just like dirty grime, and like raved like mad.
If I had a bar in the house, like, I'd be in there every night.
Yeah, wouldn't get you out.
I'd live there.
Mum, we've got a shed in the garden.
Do you want to make it into a bar now?
That is amazing. Okay, so Mum may have fluffed the pudding a bit. No, actually, I think she has fluffed it, so we may have to just get your chocolates out. We basically made a chocolate cake that was dairy-free.
Oh, my God. Because I thought you were dairy-free.
Yeah. No,
but
I
we
am.
We forgot about the gluten part. So basically, it's got gluten in it, so you do not have to have it. So
God love you.
We fucked up, basically.
Sorry.
So it's there. Mm. You can look at it. You can smell it. We can chuck into one of your chocolates, and we've got some raspberries. And
perfect.
I'm so sorry.
And we've got dairy-free ice cream, your Swedish glass.
We do have dairy-free ice cream. God. If you'd like some, but you do not have to.
Thank you so much.
If you've like, you know, this is like...
How is it my fault?
It's my fault.
It's so okay. long to...
It's our fault.
I don't normally take this long to...
No, it's because I've been asking you a lot of questions. Okay. Like, absolutely, don't worry. I'm also the fastest eater in the world. Amelia Clark.
Yes.
I can't quite believe that you were in my house, but you've come, well, my mum's house. You've come over for the chicken soup.
Yes.
You've chatted. You've been so lovely.
Oh, eaten matzo balls.
Eaten matzo balls.
Never forget.
Yeah. And now you get a tea towel.
Yes, so there you go. Tea towel.
There you go. Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Gorgeous.
Thank you.
I'm going to slide into your DMs more often now.
Yeah, girl.
I love Amelia Clark. I knew I'd love her.
Mother of Dragons.
Oh, please, Mum, you don't know who
Daenerys.
Oh, there we go.
I'm going to watch it now, because now I've met her. She's lovely.
She is lovely. I want to see the film.
She's a sweet, tiny little thing.
I
thought she was going to be taller than me, because she was a Mother of Dragons. And she was...
Do you think she's taller than Kylie Minogue?
I don't know. She was very little.
And like beautiful and sweet and generous.
Bought the best presents.
Oh my God. Take note, guests. Wow. Like champagne and really posh chocolates.
Delightful, sweet, lovely person.
I can't even imagine what that was like to have two brain hemorrhages.
Aneurysms.
But yeah, brave, lovely, generous, sweet, down to earth, everything that I expected and more.
Is she going to be your friend, Jess?
I like to think so. I'd like to get invited to one of those shed parties.
So would I. I'm thinking now.
You'd be the one that clear out the tap.
Darling, I'm thinking of now converting the shed and having Primitivo on tap.
Oh my God, imagine. Where's Mum? Oh, she's in the shed again with a Primitivo. Thank you, Amelia Clark, and thank you to everyone that's listening to this series. We love doing the series. Do we love it, Mum?
I do. I'm loving it more and more.
Oh, really?
I'm revving up for the big tour, darling.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you all have a wonderful Christmas and a good holiday and some rest. We will be back in the new year sooner than you may think. We are taking a bit less of a break this time because sod it, we're having such a good time. But happy Christmas, have a lovely rest, and
see you in 2020.
See you in 2020. The music you've heard on Table Manners is by Peter Duffy and Pete Fraser. Table Manners is produced by Alice Williams.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently. so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.